37 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next. Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTDHD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm really excited about today's morning show. We are tackling an incredibly important topic, and we're tackling it with somebody who really knows the topic thoroughly. Denise Lockwood is with Racine County Eye, and if you have not visited that website, you really need to do so, because it is a terrific way to keep abreast of a lot of the important news that's going on in Racine County and surrounding areas. And Denise Lockwood co-owns that site and is a reporter for Racine County Eye, and is doing terrific work there, particularly on the very important topic of the Oak Creek Power Plant, powered by coal, as many of you know. And I'm sure many of you are very, very well aware of the fact that that coal plant has stirred up a great deal of controversy over the years over both environmental and health concerns. And it's a story which needs to be followed carefully and explored carefully and methodically, because it's also an emotionally charged kind of issue. And it's very, very easy, very, very tempting to make grandiose statements and generalizations and so on, and when in fact cool, reasonable, rational thinking and exploration of the facts is really called for. And Denise Lockwood has really done her very best at approaching this very important topic with a great deal of care. And so I'm really excited about this opportunity to have her here in the studios to talk about this important story, to get some historical backdrop, and to get some sense of where this is going. Denise Lockwood, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Good morning.
It's really good to have you here.
Great to be here.
You were mentioning before we went on the air that you actually live in Caledonia, about 5 miles away from the Oak Creek power plant. You were saying that that is a distance in which you are not directly impacted by this power plant in the way that some people are, that really are truly neighbors to the power plant. Even so, I should think, and even just in talking to you, I get a sense that, in a sense at least, this is a very personal story for you. Could you just talk a moment about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've lived in Caledonia for probably about 13, 14 years. A lot of these people I see in the grocery store, I see them out in socially. And so I started hearing a lot of bits and pieces of this when we had the Patch websites. I used to be the editor for the Caledonia Patch. And so when the molybdenum issue came about, I've always wanted to do this story. And it's never gone away. And I think a lot of the intensity of that has to do with direct relationship to the growth of the power plant itself, which has grown from 2005 to now. It's actually grown wattage-wise, and the output is a 90% increase in power wattage. So what that's done is really kind of crystallized a lot of the experience that a lot of the neighbors have had from the perspective of their personal health, their water, the air quality issues. They're seeing soot and dust and fly ash on their homes. They're hearing a lot more trains coming through. They're having their homes rattled quite a bit. It's been a very intense experience. So I had been hearing about this for quite some time, and to be able to get to tell the story really in a comprehensive way was really important to me, because one of the things that I noticed was that a lot of the neighbors really weren't talking to each other over the years. So I would hear little bits of, hey, this person's sick, and hey, this person's sick, and this person has boron in their well. And so this really, that's why I started mapping it, because I really thought collectively this is important to kind of document this experience that they're having.
And now it sounds like these neighbors are talking. This is drawing them yeah. together in a way that they have not really been together until yeah. recently.
Yeah, and a lot of politically, this had been seen as only affecting a few within the immediate area. So you had some complaints here and there of, you know, the trains, the coal cars, the number of coal cars increased from 80 to 142. They're rattling my house. They idle next to my house. There's a lot more dust in the air. But then it transformed into, I can't breathe. And then a number of neighbors that lived around in the area had cancer. And you had COPD and atrial fibrillation and strokes and heart attacks. And so that was one of the reasons why mapping this was really important, because not to say that it was caused by We Energies, but really there's a lot of questions here that need answers.
Right. Let's get a little historical backdrop on the plant itself. Tell our listeners when this plant was first built, and sort of trace its arc of development. And I think it's important to say that right from the start, it has been a coal-burning plant.
Right. It's been always a coal-burning plant. And that particular area was extremely rural. It's still relatively rural. But you've got several pockets of residential areas that have kind of cropped up. There's a new subdivision just to the north of the plant that literally they're just building houses now on some of that area. And this is within like a 3-mile radius. And so when the plant itself came about in the 1950s, it was, I believe it was 1953 when it first became operational, that entire land was flat. Okay. Now there, one of the neighbors the other day called them mountains, and the mountains are actually coal ash. The coal ash is when the electricity is generated, it's generated through steam, and the waste that's produced is coal ash and bottom ash. And so those, you know, mountains, the actual bluff collapse that happened, I believe it was in 2011, was actually the coal ash that had spilled into Lake Michigan. And so historically, you know, what I was told, and this is one of the things that I'm actually working on building a lot more story around, but historically, the biggest problems had just actually culminated in relationship to the expansion in the last 5 years. But one of the things that I'd been hearing as far as kind of some of the narrative around how these neighbors experienced this growth process over the years is that there were some neighborhood kids that would they would slide down the coal ash piles when they were growing up, when it snowed, and they would take their dirt bikes and ride around in them. And so we didn't always know what we know now. And I think that's probably has a lot to do with a lot of the impact that you've seen over time. A lot of these neighbors, their homes were built in, some of them are century-old homes, don't get me wrong, but most of the residents that are living around that area, the homes were built in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Right. Tell us how this plant fits into We Energy's overall structure. First of all, at least roughly, how many power plants do they have across the state of Wisconsin? And of those power plants, how many of them are coal-burning plants like the power plant in Oak Creek?
Well, the Oak Creek power plant is one of about six We Energy's plants. There's several generating stations. They also have some natural gas. And what I think is relevant is that so prior to the expansions that happened, they started out in like the early 2010-2009 era. But in 2005, the amount of coal, the electricity that was produced by the generating station represented about 30% of the total overall amount of energy that We Energy's produced.
Through the state.
Through the state. Now it represents 60%.
So the plant in Oak Creek is becoming an increasingly important player in the total energy output of We Energies. Do we understand why that shift in the percentage is so dramatic?
A lot of it goes back to this federal lawsuit. So the EPA really took issue with the archaic, a lot of the infrastructure that was currently in place, and they said, you got to do better. And so there was a really long, drawn-out federal lawsuit that basically took We Energies to task. And so they were mandated to reduce a lot of the emissions that they had over the years. And this, they invested heavily in the Oak Creek power plant. And they've done a lot of work with regards to really cleaning up their act. And so they've done some really great work from the perspective on some issues. But on the other hand, So, for example, they've reduced some of the emissions for sulfur and nitrogen oxide, sulfur dioxide, particulate matter, volatile organic compounds, and mercury. So they've reduced those components. But with regards to the carbon dioxide, it's literally doubled. So in 2005, they actually produced 6,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide. But in 2014, it was 11,127.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It sounds like what you're saying is in order for them to come into closer compliance with some of these regulations involving emissions, they put a lot of money specifically into the Oak Creek plant. And because that plant, at least in these respects, is a little cleaner than it was before, it makes more sense then for them to more heavily utilize that plant versus other plants where they haven't made a similar investment. Is that sort of what you're suggesting?
Yeah, so just to kind of give a little perspective, a little rounding out of this, because I want to make sure I'm being fair and balanced on this, but like the nitrogen oxide levels went down by 96%. So the particulate matter went down 8%, the volatile compounds 25%, and mercury was 90% down.
So significant.
So it's not any small potatoes by any chance.
Right.
But one of the issues is that they're going through about 6,000 to 6,200 tons of coal every day. And so what that means to these neighbors is you've got a lot more coal trains, you've got a lot of trains that are idling, that are having a lot of diesel fuel, and this has overall the long-term impact of having been exposed to a lot of what's been going on over the plant has really started to take a toll on what the neighbors believe. The neighbors are claiming that they are getting sick. Now, that's obviously We Energies is really investigating. And so one of the things that they're doing is there's a process, there's a mediation process going on right now. between the neighbors, between We Energies. We Energies is investigating a lot of their health concerns. They're testing the homes. So they're really, they're doing what they need to do as far as doing the due diligence. And they also, I just learned on Monday night that they're actually putting in an air quality station about a mile south of the plant, which is really important to the neighbors, because one of the biggest issues that they're saying is the coal dust and the fly ash is what's, what they believe is the issue, but they really don't know. So that's one of the things that they really want to understand. And so that's one of the questions that they're really trying to kind of sort through.
So it sounds like our concerns have shifted then a bit over the years, that a huge concern, and still a concern, but a concern which has been largely addressed, is what the plant emits in the wake of generating all this power, the emission of mercury and other toxic elements into the atmosphere. That has been very directly addressed, by no means cured or eliminated, but I mean very aggressively addressed. What you're suggesting is that these neighbors have a concern, in a sense, about the threats before a single wattage of energy has been created. I mean, just bringing all this coal on site, and some of the, it's almost like the difference between digital and analog. It's like the analog kind of damage that's being done.
Right. Well, and these are long-term impacts. So, but I also want to kind of bring in some perspective too, because there's a lot of discussion about what is the appropriate amount of emissions, especially with carbon dioxide. So the EPA has also started really looking into this, and they've come out with the Clean Power rules that the EPA has issued. And the state, Governor Walker, a couple of months ago, or actually not even a couple of months ago, I want to say it was in the beginning of the month, has filed a federal lawsuit against the EPA, or a lawsuit against the federal government over a lot of these EPA, these new rules that are supposed to be implemented that would actually reduce the carbon emissions. So there's a lot of battleground going on, and it's actually, the forefront is the Oak Creek Power Plant.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today on The Morning Show with Denise Lockwood, who is a reporter with Racine County Eye. That's EYE. And Racine County Eye has been doing extensive coverage of the situation involving the Oak Creek Power Plant. It is a coal-burning power plant, and by a significant margin, the major power plant for We Energies in the state of Wisconsin. And a host of questions have been raised, particularly by the neighbors of Oak Creek, although by no means only by them. I mean, all kinds of different environmental groups have been, in a sense, sounding the alarm and calling for very aggressive questions to be posed to We Energies about some of these concerns. Denise, I want to circle back to something that you just said, because it's probably something that does not get said enough, and it's an important part of this. And it has to do with We Energies and their openness to some of these concerns and their willingness to address them. And it sounds like they are not utterly impregnable and completely indifferent to these concerns that are being raised, and probably not just for altruistic reasons, but I mean, any public entity is shooting themselves in the foot if they are completely callous or seen as completely callous when it comes to public concerns like this. I mean, it's in their own best interests to at least appear to be concerned, and it sounds like you believe that to some extent, at least, they have shown some due diligence in addressing some of these questions.
I think they're starting to. Quite frankly, the neighbors would definitely tell you something different. So I want to make sure that I kind of put this in perspective, too. So We Energies has bought out about 27 properties around the coal plant. And one of the things that We Energies has said is that, look, we know that there's some concerns going on, whether it's truck traffic, whether, you know, there are some concerns here. Okay. One of the things the neighbors have really, really been frustrated with is when they have been actually buying these homes, there has been a process where they are saying on one hand, look, we're not going to these neighbors directly, but But then on top of that, there were 17 of the 27 properties that went through all one real estate agent who said, look, to the neighbors, I have an entity that's interested in buying your property. It's an anonymous person, but when they list, they tell them that it's We Energies. And then so they go through this process, and then there's confidentiality agreements that are part of these deals. There are requirements that at closing, the We Energies has been paying them $10,000 for a moving credit in exchange for a notice of not to sue them, not to have toxic tort, things along that line. So the neighbors are telling me this isn't right. That's what they're telling me, and that they have some really big concerns over some of the things that they feel that We Energies hasn't been responsive enough. And I think that there's a definite opportunity there that We Energies is starting to respond to, especially right. with the air monitoring station and things along that line.
So what is the presumption in terms of this of We Energies purchasing all of these various properties? Is it that they are buying up these homes and properties and then clearing them so nobody lives there?
That's what's happening. Basically, the 27 properties, they knock the buildings down. From my understanding, they cap off the water and sewer and lines and things along that line, and they're vacant properties. So they're putting in a buffer zone. And from what We Energies has told me over the years is that they're buying these properties up to alleviate some of the concerns that some of the neighbors have had over truck traffic and things along that line. And it's there's a lot of questions and concerns that the neighbors have had. Some of the neighbors have not sold. Some of them have been telling me that they have actually been given letters that they have been told that the We Energies will, if they want to, exercise their power to do eminent domain. So this is creating a lot of tension. There's a lot of tension in these neighbors.
Right. Yeah. And it sounds like this process has maybe not gone forward with complete transparency, which is only fueling some of these neighbors' concerns.
The neighbors would definitely tell you that some issues.
At least
not Denise.
right. At least from their perspective. Yeah. And I guess that's part of it, too, is that this is not just the story of a big power plant. This is also the story of the neighbors who live around there.
Very much
and,
so.
And what they are experiencing and the conclusions and connections they are drawing, whether erroneously or not. But it's a very, very important story. And even if a small portion of their fears and suspicions are proven to be true, that's a significant story right there.
It is. And one of the things that's happening right now, there's quite a few things happening with this storyline. It's not just it's a combination of stories. So you've got We Energies and the neighbors that are going through this mediation process. They're not at a point where anyone's filed a lawsuit, but they're mediating over whether or not they're really looking at the health concerns the neighbors have, the water quality, the air quality concerns, their property values. Those are the four components of the neighbors' concerns. So We Energies actually has hired a third-party testing company, and then the neighbors hired a third-party testing company, and they've gone into a number of homes around the area, and I've actually been in the homes when they're doing the testing, and they're testing the homes for the presence of coal dust and coal ash. And a lot of the politicians that I've been talking to have been telling me they're going to hold off on really kind of having any kind of response until that process gets vetted out. And then also with the air quality monitoring station, and why that's important is because the particulate matter, the little fine little dust particles in the air that are produced when electricity is being made are of concern for health issues. For example, fly ash and coal dust have been associated with, not caused by, but associated with everything from asthma, bronchitis, atrial fibrillation, strokes, heart attacks, all of these really cancer, some types of cancer. It's really hard to kind of connect the dot with a lot of different types of cancer, but a lot of this this process of making coal includes a lot of heavy metals like lead, mercury. You've got a lot of arsenic. Actually, one of the things that I found out in 2005, the We Energies Oak Creek Power Plant produced about 5 pounds of arsenic in a year. In 2011, it was 65 pounds. And I don't know, there's a big question that I need to get answered on what it is now, but I'm in the process of trying to kind of go through a lot of that. But
I recall one of your most recent headlines had something to do with arsenic and the fact that We Energies has requested a variance, I would presume, so they would not be held to the strictest standards in terms of arsenic emissions.
Right. Well, to be fair, one of the things that We Energies has been really saying to the community is, look, we with regards to arsenic levels, the state of Wisconsin has the strictest levels imposed on arsenic. Now, there's a couple of different places where this is relevant. Is from the Lake Michigan. They take water from Lake Michigan and recirculate it into the generating station for cooling purposes, and then they return it to Lake Michigan. And Lake Michigan's arsenic levels are already at 1.47. They return it to, I think, a 1.47 or it's pretty equal. So they're not, water-wise is not the major issue, according to the EPA when I talked to them about it. But one of the concerns they do have is what's coming out of the stacks. And so there's a variance that has been filed by We Energies that they're actually working with the DNR on. But the EPA, this is all connected to the Clean Power Initiative and these new rule changes. And We Energies and the DNR are playing very well in the sandbox, but the EPA is really taking issue with it. And the governor has filed the lawsuit against the federal government over it.
Let's talk about some of the specific health concerns that have been raised. You painted this picture of a lot of neighbors that don't particularly communicate a lot, but they are starting to communicate with each other very much so now in as they start to realize you're sick, oh, I'm sick too. And
right.
Of course, the temptation is to draw all kinds of connections that may or may not be worth connecting. I mean, it's one of the hardest things to determine. And of course, when one's talking about one's own physical health, it's a very personal sort of concern. And when people you love are facing devastating illness, it is the most natural thing in the world to want to be able to point a finger of blame or responsibility to somebody else. So there's a lot going on here, and I appreciate the fact that you are approaching this with such care. You told me something before we went on the air that was really quite chilling. It seems like the kind of array of stories that is very, very hard to argue with in terms of seeming to indicate that something is very wrong here. I want you to tell our listeners about this array of homes and how all of them, every single home, has people that are very, very seriously ill.
Yeah. So there, and what I told you was literally the tip of the iceberg, which is one of the reasons why I started to map all of this, because I would keep hearing about this. So right on the corner of County Line Road and Douglas Avenue, County Line Road is just to the north of the power plant, and there were about 7 homes just on Douglas Avenue. There's about 4 or 5 of them around the corner. Some of them have been bought and knocked down, so they're not present anymore. But I started talking to a lot of the neighbors, and the stretch of homes right just to the south on Douglas Avenue, there were 7 homes. There's one still on the corner. And those 7 homes, of those people that lived there, all 7 of them either have cancer, have died of cancer, or have COPD. And it's various types of cancer, everything from ovarian cancer, breast cancer, lung cancer. Some people smoked, some people didn't. And that's just one block. Around the corner, there are several people that have prostate cancer. There's a person that has pancreatic cancer, COPD. Around just to the south of the plant, a lot of the MCNAs, there's actually 11 children. They all, almost all of them live on MCNA Road. And that family has homesteaded in that area since the 1850s. And they have told me that they all have asthma. Atrial fibrillation is a dominant piece of what they've experienced. Nose polyps, you've got strokes. Then you also have, there's one fellow, his name is Tim Hupp. And Tim has lived in this house that he grew up in. He actually moved back to his childhood home in 2004 when his mom died of COPD. His three siblings died of cancer. His wife has cancer. He has COPD. He smokes, but he also has stopped smoking. He's been hospitalized for pneumonia 18 times over the last, since 2008. I could go on and on and on and on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I suppose one way to be truly methodical about this would be if one were to go 5 miles south or 5 miles west and examine the people who live in certain blocks and chart the preponderance of something like cancer,
right,
or some of these other issues that have been raised, to see, are we talking truly about dramatically elevated numbers here?
Right.
Or does it just seem like it?
Exactly. And that's one of the things that if you're really being a really strong critical, and that's one of the reasons why I ended up starting to crowdfund around this project, because I wanted to start asking some of those questions, knowing full well, again, I am not a scientist and I don't pretend to be one on TV. But at the end of the day, really starting just to keep asking the questions. But I know the health department has, the state health department has been interviewing a lot of these neighbors. Okay. And about 2 weeks ago, I caught them when they were first starting to have these conversations of whether or not they were going to do an epidemiological study, which would be the answer to a lot of these scientific questions. And it definitely is not an anecdotal type of a story like I would do. But I know the State Department of the Health Department has been doing some surveys. At 2 weeks ago, when I asked them if they were going to do an epidemiological study, they said, no, I'm going to double check and just make sure I'm doing my due diligence and find out if anything's changed. So one of the things that I want to do with this map is just that, is look at how are we doing 2, 3, 4, 5 miles away, and really trying to understand what's kind of at work here. Are people, but I do know that a lot of neighbors are starting to really pay attention to this and start to ask some really good questions.
I know that particularly some of the neighbors in the area, and I'm sure concerned environmentalists, have been sort of going at this in a couple of different ways. And one of them was that the neighbors were wanting to have some kind of air monitoring station constructed. And it sounds like We Energies is in the process of doing exactly that.
Right. So the We Energies, I found out Monday night at the Caledonia Village board meeting the other night that they're going to be putting in an air monitoring station right over on 7 Mile Road, which is it's just about a mile and a half, about a mile from the power plant itself. And they're going to be putting it real close to the tracks, which is one of the areas that has been a really high concern. One of the major criticisms that a lot of the neighbors had was that no one was monitoring the air quality from a distance away. The EPA has lots of data of what's going on and coming out of the stacks, but we don't know what the impact is in the surrounding community. There's an air monitoring station actually in 3 Mile in Charles, but it only measures ozone and not particulate matter.
So this stuff goes out of the stacks, but of course it doesn't go straight up into outer space. It fills the atmosphere, presumably flowing to the north to South Milwaukee, and flowing southward into Racine and perhaps Kenosha, and who knows where else. I know that another thing that the neighbors have at least talked about doing is mounting some kind of campaign to pressure We Energies to convert this plant from coal to natural gas. Evidently, a kind of conversion that has occurred in other places. Can you just say a word about that? What that would represent? Is that a completely preposterous proposition, or in fact, is that a real possibility that that might in fact be explored?
Well, I do know that We Energies has told me that converting the Oak Creek power plant to a natural gas is not on their radar right now. Have they done it? Yes. Have they done it recently? Yes.
We Energies, you mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Actually, the Valley Power Plant in Milwaukee was converted a couple of years ago. I want to say it got finished up 2013, 2014. And a lot of it was due to public pressure. Now, that was a much smaller plant. Hmm. It was smack dab in the Menominee Valley over, I want to say, I'm going to be guessing, but it's in the Menominee Valley area. And so that was primarily because of a lot of public pressure. Now, what's happened is there's a fellow by the name of Bill Pringle who has been really spearheading and really starting a lot of the petitions and this movement to start putting some political pressure on the elected officials and things along that line. And Bill, ironically, he used to live in Caledonia. He doesn't anymore. He lives actually in Mount Pleasant. He moved. His entire family, his wife had been asthmatic before she moved to Caledonia, and their symptoms had gotten significantly worse. And one of the things that was interesting about his story was that his entire family, they have, I want to say, at the time, they had like four or five kids, and they all became asthmatic. And having breathing problems and all sorts of things were going on. And they had, We Energies had tested their home, the outside of their home, the snow melt, because he walked out of his house one day and it had snowed and it looked like someone had put a giant pepper shaker out on his lawn, he said to me. And he had We Energies test the snow melt, and they found coal dust in the sample, but when I talked to We Energies about that, they said that they didn't know where that sample came from.
So there are some interesting concerns that are being raised here. I know through the course of this, you have probably come to understand at least something about the generation of energy and why it is that coal is something that most power companies sort of are steadfastly maintaining, even in the face of all kinds of concerns that are raised. So does coal remain the most sort of productive way to create electricity? And if so, why?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure if I'm really qualified to answer that, because I'm certainly no industry expert. But I do know that one of the things that We Energies is doing right now is, and this is part of the issue that the neighbors are really telling me about, and also We Energies is talking a lot about this on their investor calls. So one of the things that they're doing is they're switching to different type of coal. They're mostly what they had been burning was a bituminous coal, and since the 1990s, they've been using some of what's called subbituminous coal. And why that's important is that subbituminous coal is mostly coming from the western part of the country. It's known to be more volatile in air because it's strip mined from the top of the earth. So it's less dense, it's less compact. So when it's in transport, you'll see oftentimes there's almost a plume of dust that follows the trains. And you'll see that it takes more coal to burn when you're using subbituminous coal. And one of the reasons why they talk on the investor call that I heard earlier this month, they were talking about this. The reason why they're using subbituminous coal is because it's a lot cheaper. It takes more of it, but in the grand scheme of things, it helps their bottom line and actually helps the ratepayers save money on their bills. So that's one of the reasons why they're doing it. And what this kind of creates the conflict is they need to double the size of the coal pile that they now have.
Wow. Yeah. A coal pile that, as you said, was going to be enclosed and, in fact, is not.
Right. Originally, when the expansion happened, they were building a storage shed that they said that they were going to put the coal inside of. And it is all there is some coal in it, but most of the coal is outside, and they're doubling the size of the coal plant starting in 2017.
Hmm. The what is driving this, evidently, to a large extent, is our own consumption of electricity, which is, of course, escalating dramatically. And We Energies, to supply what we are asking of them, has to get their electricity somewhere. And, of course, what you were saying, I think, earlier also is that this plant in Oak Creek is not just supplying electricity to those of us who live here, but all over the state.
Right, right. But it's become substantially, we're using more here now. So I've got a couple of numbers here I can get you for a second. The total purchased power for total electric generation for general purchase power for the entire system was at 5,928 gigawatts, and that was in 2005, and now that it's less than 1,000, it's about 989 gigawatts.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we hear about alternative energies like wind, like solar, and of course natural gas we've already talked about. To what extent does We Energy seem to be serious about some of these other possibilities?
Well, and some of the groups that I've talked to are really concerned about how We Energies has really kind of taken issue with some of the people that wanted to go on solar power. So there's a fee that they were charging people to be on the grid to pay their fair share. Hmm. And that's what We Energies wanted to make sure of. And so the PSC backed them up on that. And from my understanding, there was a lawsuit that was filed, and I think it's in appeals court, perhaps. I'll have to double check on that. But there's this process that they're going through that they took issue with We Energies with how they treat the solar people who are on solar power, as far as that goes.
Tell us for a moment about the experience of exploring this story, not from the perspective of the neighbors, but in terms of trying to sort of get inside the minds of We Energies themselves and understand their policies and practices and so on. First of all, you made mention when we were talking before we went on the air about examining their corporate responsibility report.
Right, I have it right in front of me.
Right. So that points to the fact that this is not a company whose doors are entirely closed to the prying eyes of a reporter.
Right.
And they can't be. I mean, they're not allowed to be. Talk for a moment about the avenues by which you, in a sense, are able to get inside the door and get meaningful information from We Energies themselves.
They've actually been really good in responding to me as far as that goes. One of the concerns that I had, I don't want to say concern, but really trying to kind of vet out some of this, I really wanted to isolate what does this mean to Oak Creek. So within the social responsibility report, they've got a little block quote that talks about the overall savings, or not necessarily savings, but the emissions that they've reduced. And they were saying that sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, mercury, particulate matter were down by 80%. Well, in some cases within mercury and one of the other elements, that's correct because they have. But on the other hand, like particulate matter, which is a really big deal to the people that are breathing in the particulate matter, because particulate matter is all of that little fine particles that get into your system and create havoc within, you know, your lungs and your heart, and all it stresses out your whole system. And so this has been a really big issue. And so I went and I said, okay, I want to get this information and I want to make sure. And they've been very responsive, I mean, as far as what I've been trying to get them to tell me things. They've been very responsive about that. I haven't had any issues with not feeling like I'm pulling teeth at all, but which is good. With the EPA, I've been working with the EPA to really understand, and I've got a lot of work to still do. But it's something that I'm very dedicated to because at the end of the day, I want to make sure that I'm helping the community understand, not necessarily as they would have it be, but really help them understand what they're dealing with and what We Energies is dealing with as well. Because at the end of the day, we still use a lot of power.
Absolutely.
So that's a responsibility that we have as far as being human beings on this earth. And at the end of the day, if we're still consuming it, they're still making it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
So what happens next? First of all, in terms of the sort of the story itself, what is sort of the next important chapter? What is sort of underway right now, or what studies are we waiting for, or what wheels of justice are turning?
Well, there's a lot, actually. So we're waiting for We Energies to come out with the testing results for the homes that were tested. I'm looking at talking to the Department of Health Services to find out what happened with that survey. I'm going to the meetings that the neighbors are having and looking at what it is that they're doing and how they, because there certainly, there was a group of, they met the other day and there were probably about 100 people there. Not everyone is buying into this idea of natural gas. Some are. Some aren't. They're actually in the process. Bill and a lot of the people that are in the group are actually pulling together a steering committee to really try to look at what do they want to do and how do they want to do it. And I know that We Energies is really looking at the air monitoring, so I'm going to be following up on that process. I'm expanding the map. I've got a lot on this one, you know. So, yeah.
You mentioned in passing something about is it called crowdsourcing?
Crowdfunding. Yeah,
crowdfunding.
It's just a fancy way of saying we want donations.
Right.
But so I had a crowdfunding project. So this is one of the new things. Since I co-own the news website, we're always looking at diversifying a revenue stream because I can only sell so many ads to so many businesses. But if you want one, I got one for you. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but crowdfunding is I went through this company called Beacon Reader, which is a crowdfunding site that specifically focuses on journalism projects. And the reason why that was important was because I wanted to make sure that someone, that I had an infrastructure that was helping me poke holes in things and really trying to take a critical eye of what I was doing as well. Because at the end of the day, I'm me, and I know that I'm a human being and fallible, so I want to make sure I'm doing the right types of journalism and holding up to my ethics and to be able to be humble and pull in resources. That's what I do. So a lot of these stories that I have, I actually have kind of like a 3 or 4 different editors that I've worked with over the years that help me vet it and poke holes and hold me accountable and really look at my side of the fence on this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that helps explain the really terrific work that you have done. Remind our listeners, if they want to take a look at some of the reporting that you've done on this issue with Racine County Eye, how do they find those reports?
It's RacineCountyEye.com. And on the menu that we have, there's a specific tab called We Energies. So all of the reporting gets put into that container. With the crowdfunding project, that I did get that fully funded. So we're going to be starting. I'm actually hiring a freelance writer, and I'm so grateful for that because I can't do all of this alone.
Right.
But she's going to start helping me with the map, and we're going to talk about really building a resource for neighbors and the community because they have a lot of questions. So I'm always looking at, okay, how do we help understand this together?
Right. Very well put. Racine County Eye, EYE.
Yes.
And Denise Lockwood, its owner or co-owner and one of its reporters. Thank you so much for being here and for helping shed some light on a really complex but important topic.
I appreciate it.
Great to have you here. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, I'll be speaking with historian Simon Reed about his fascinating new book about young Winston Churchill, taking a look at an early period of his career when he first sort of traveled the world, became a war reporter, and really saw and experienced the horrors of war in person. It's a fascinating book, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow on the morning show here on WGTD. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu.